The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jean Latshaw from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Ladies Magazines. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from various ladies' magazines, Better Homes and Gardens, Good Housekeeping, Martha Stewart Living, Real Simple, and Woman's Day. Let's get started with this one from Good Housekeeping's Little Lab. Expert advice and inspiration for your family and pets. A new era of period positivity. Thanks to a more open dialogue about menstruation, a generation of adolescents is embracing their bodies with confidence. Early last year, just shy of my daughter's 12th birthday, I was working on a puzzle when she told me, in an offhand but discreet way, "Just so you know, I started my period. But it's fine. I'm taking care of it. I'm just letting you know because you asked me to tell you." Putting on my best poker face, I offered a quick hug and kiss and told her to let me know if she had any questions or needed anything, but I secretly marveled at how she'd seemingly taken this transition in stride, whereas my own first period experience in the 1980s had been shrouded in fear, confusion, and shame. You know, the kind that makes a frantic fifth grader wad up half a dozen tissues in her underpants. A few months after my daughter's low-key pronouncement, two 11-year-old Girl Scouts arrived at our door and asked my husband for a donation to their bronze award project. They were assembling first period kits, packed with a variety of pads and tampons, starter diva cups donated by the company after the girls pitched their idea via Zoom, and junior-size period underwear for every fifth-grade girl in the school district. The hubs quickly chirped. Hubs happily chipped in while I gaped. When I was their age, I would have hidden in the bushes, hyperventilating, had I been asked to approach neighbors, especially men, and talk openly about menstruation. How had we finally arrived at this moment of period positivity for young girls? For one thing, girls have far more information options available to them now. They're not dependent on a grainy school film strip shown once by the gym teacher. For instance, the preteen graphic novel Go With the Flow by Lily Williams and Karen Sheenman focuses on four teens who not only openly discuss their own menstrual experiences, but also decide that their high school bathroom's constant lack of menstrual supplies and the cost of those items when they're actually stocked is a human rights issue. So let me tell you about that book again, Go With the Flow, by Lily Williams, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S, and Karen Sheenman, S-C-H-N-E-E-M-A-N-N. We were trying to create what we thought was missing from all the books we read growing up, a book that was fun to read, but that also treated periods as part of everyday life, says Sheenman. After all, it was published in January 2020, one of the first reactions they saw was from a dad who had given it to his daughter. She read through it in one sitting and then told him he should read it too. It's been so wonderful to hear that this is a book that can be a starting point for kids and their parents to have those conversations, says Schneeman. And current trends like period parties demonstrate a push towards celebrating a girl's menstrual milestone rather than hiding it. I love the idea of surrounding our girls with a fellowship of women to talk openly about sex and biology, says Leah Miss, M.D., a child psychiatrist and the author of the new book, No Shame, Real Talk with Your Kids About Sex, Self-Confidence, and Healthy Relationships. And her name is Lee Liss, L-I-S. It takes a village to raise a child, and a child can't get all they need to develop healthy, sex-positive self-esteem from their mother. They need another role model open to talking about everything from menstruation to healthy body image, conception, and healthy sexual relationships. They also, of course, need healthcare professionals who take their concerns and problems seriously. Thanks to a small but growing number of doctors specializing in adolescent gynecology, they're finally getting that. This specialty is a new option for physicians. A formalized training program and a board exam was established just this past decade. Monica Wohl Rosen, M.D., an assistant professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Michigan Medical School, says the field has about a dozen fellowships around the country. Those in the practice of medicine finally decided this was something we should be paying attention to, she says. Things like debilitating periods are a real issue, and should be treated, not just pushed to the side. And a young person is more likely to seek help when they're comfortable talking about their body. This is partly what inspired Girl Scout troop leader Amanda Hartman, who hatched the first period kit idea when the COVID-19 pandemic shut down schools before the Scouts had their fifth grade health program. When we do the kit making, we're going to go through each product and do the health class they didn't get, she says. We had to talk to parents and make sure they were comfortable with that and everybody's on board. Not only did the troop succeed in gathering the donated supplies and money necessary to make a comprehensive first period kit for all 265 fifth grade girls in their school district, but the Scouts will also be donating $1,400 worth of feminine supplies to a local charity. In the end, though, I decided I needed to hear from Hartman's 11-year-old daughter, Lily, also a troop member, about how she had felt when asking neighbors for period kit donations. At the beginning, she said, I didn't really want to do it, but it got easier. The more I did it, the more comfortable I got. From Martha Stewart Living on our bookshelf, and it looks like they've got three books here. When Hetty McKinnon was growing up in Australia, her Chinese mother always had a pot of congee simmering on the stove and no fewer than three freezers full of dumplings. Sound like heaven? Check out To Asia with Love. And this is written by Hetty McKinnon, M-C, capital K-I-N-N-O-N. It serves up those treasured recipes and new ones like Kakyo y Pepe udon noodles. One pearl of wisdom. This might be the next book. One pearl of wisdom in veteran magazine editor Kristen Von Augtrop's ultra-relatable memoir, Did I Say That Out Loud? And her name, Kristen Van Augtrop, O-G-T-R-O-P, is our unofficial 2021 motto. Let's just be happy to be here. She bobs through midlife's low points, swallowing a mysterious object and getting emergency surgery. Check your salads, folks. Leaving her job and losing a beloved black lab, and comes up for air laughing. And the third, for a trip to the shore, no matter where you live, flip through A Summer Place. Stylist, author, and living contributor Tricia Foley, that's F-O-L-E-Y, and the book A Summer Place, shares 23 homes in her village of Bellport, Brookhaven on Long Island that are as breezy and chic as a great pair of white jeans. From Real Simple, electronic waste, the power of less. As technology zips along, we're amassing mountains of old devices. Recycle them for a huge environmental impact. When you think of recycling, you probably picture your bin full of cans and bottles. And while you may get a twinge of guilt when you toss a soda can into the trash, you should really feel remorse about old cell phones, laptops, and tablets. Those hunks of plastic, metal, and microprocessor chips going into the garbage. These devices can be ecological scourges at both the start and end of their lives. They're made with metals mined from the earth, and they pollute groundwater once they're in a landfill. The good news, though, is that when taken apart, they're almost entirely recyclable, says Patty McKenzie, Director of Education and Outreach at Sustainable Electronics Recycling International, or Surrey. If you look at the components, they're all a resource. So the next time you're thinking about upgrading to the latest phone or tablet, consider these strategies for reducing e-waste. Hang on to gadgets longer. First of all, if your old one still works, keep it. This is the easiest and best thing you can do to cut down on electronic waste. Almost 75% of a cell phone's total energy consumption happens before it even reaches you, during manufacturing and distribution, according to Surrey's stats. Plus, recycling alone will not solve the e-waste issue because of the huge volume of electronics we consume every year, adds Serge Verdoeks, managing director at Backmarket, a marketplace for refurbished electronics. That's why it's so important to extend the life of our devices. Next, explore repair options. Often a cracked screen or a battery that won't hold a charge will send you to the store for a new device. But repair should always be your first move, says Jason Linnell, executive director of the National Center for Electronics Recycling. Find repair locations at cta.tech, or if you're brave enough to DIY, check out ifixit.com. Just make sure at-home repairs won't void your warranty. iFixit offers free videos to guide you through the process and sell the tools you'll need, including those teeny tiny screwdrivers that open devices. Next, buy refurbished. Almost every manufacturer sells certified refurbished devices. These are often open box items that were barely used or merely opened and returned. Even if the device had a nice long life with a previous owner, you can still get a warranty. Backmarket, for example, offers a one-year warranty, the same duration Apple and Samsung offer. And as Verdox points out, less-than-mint devices come with significant cost savings and are great for kids who may be rough with electronics. Donate old electronics ASAP. The longer things linger, the less opportunity there is for reuse, McKenzie says. As soon as you're ready to ditch your old device, look up the manufacturer's recycling policy. Companies like Apple, Dell, and Amazon will buy back and or recycle phones, laptops, tablets, and e-readers. If you have a stash of ancient electronics, bring them to your town's electronic waste collection event or drop them off at Staples or Best Buy, which both take back tech for recycling. Erase your content and do a factory reset beforehand. This ensures the device is either used by someone else or taken apart and recycled. And there's a little aside here. If you do just one thing, never toss devices into your regular trash. The potentially toxic materials inside, like lead and mercury, need to be processed by a special handler. And though your clunky old iPhone 5 may not have much resale potential, it still contains valuable materials that can be reused. And for extra credit, join the Digital Right to Repair Coalition, a national public interest group advocating for legislation that would make it easier for consumers to repair data-driven devices, like phones, laptops, appliances, and even cars. Visit repair.org/stand-up to get involved and contact your representative. From Better Homes and Gardens, what you need to know about the COVID-19 vaccines. We know you have lots of questions about the rollout of the first COVID vaccines. We went to the experts for answers. Question: the vaccines were developed so quickly. Are they really safe? Answer: a number of factors made it possible for these first vaccines to be thoroughly tested, vetted, and rolled out faster than usual. One reason, the science behind the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, which use mRNA technology, goes back 30 years, says Lee Riley, MD, chair of the Division of Infectious Disease and Vaccinology at the University of California, Berkeley School of Public Health. Global cooperation among scientists also sped up the process. Another factor, vaccine trials need a certain number of cases to occur to prove the shot is effective. With so much COVID circulating, it was easier for the trials to be completed, says Sarah Schaefer, MD, Assistant Professor of Infectious Diseases at the Icahn School of Medicine, Mount Sinai. Question: how do I know the vaccine won't give me COVID or cause bad side effects? And the answer: you can't get COVID from the Moderna or Pfizer vaccinations because they don't contain the virus, Riley says. Instead, they prompt cells to produce a piece of the protein on the virus surface, which stimulates the immune system to make antibodies against similar proteins. People who've had side effects most commonly reported about 1 to 2 days of muscle pain, fatigue, and/or a headache. A few have had a severe allergic response to the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, so if you carry an EpiPen or have ever reacted to a vaccine, talk to your doctor first. And question: will the vaccines protect against new strains? At the time of publication, lab data shows that the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines protect against United Kingdom strain, but less so against the South African strain. The good news is that mRNA technology is easily adaptable, and both companies are working on boosters for new strains circulating. The crucial point: Schaefer says, is that the virus can only mutate when it replicates, and it can only replicate when it's in a host. That's us. If we reduce transmission, we decrease replication and the emergence of new strains. So it's vital that as many people as possible get vaccinated ASAP. Question, if I get vaccinated, can I stop wearing a mask? Answer, definitely no. Although you can be fairly confident you won't get COVID once vaccinated, studies show 95% efficacy, scientists are still figuring out if vaccinated people can carry and spread the virus. More info should be available in the next few months. And there's a couple of little asides. First, this info applies only to the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines available as they went to press. They have emergency use authorization from the Food and Drug Administration. And the other, check in and let your doctor know that you're getting vaccinated. They'll update their records. From Good Housekeeping, spring project, plan your garden. Even if it's still too early to play in the dirt where you live, prepping your backyard for patio planting is half the fun. Use these tips from Penn State Extension Master Gardener Coordinator Nancy Knoss to set yourself up for success. First, timing is everything. Don't be too eager to get plants in the ground. Sinking them too early can lead to disappointing results. Annuals, tropical plants, and newly purchased perennials should not go into the ground until after the danger of the last frost has passed. Check the Farmer's Almanac to find out when that is near you. Take your soil's temperature. Summer flowering bulbs like dahlias, cannas, and tuberous begonias prefer warmer temperatures and shouldn't be planted until the soil temperature reaches 60 degrees. You can determine how warm the ground is by sticking the probe of an instant read thermometer 4 inches below the surface and leaving it there for 5 minutes. Knaus advises testing several days in a row for the most accurate results. Start bulbs indoors. If you just can't wait to get your hands dirty, give summer blooming bulbs a head start indoors. 4 to 6 weeks before the last frost date, pot the bulbs individually in a well-drained soilless potting mixture and put them in a bright indoor location. Transplant them when the danger of frost has passed. Finish non-planting chores. Before it's time to put in new plants, get your garden ready. Pull out weeds that are winter annuals, such as chickweed, hairy bittercress, and henbit, before they go to seed, and cut out dead or damaged wood from trees and shrubs. If it's too cold outside, make a plan for spring planting. Observe light patterns from indoors to determine where to position new arrivals. And last, go for outdoor containers. If you have only a little outside space or want to brighten up your early spring garden, start with cold-tolerant annuals and vegetables. Knaus recommends combining Swiss chard or kale with pansies, snapdragons, lobelia, and calendula for a pretty planter you can partially eat. Those hardy plants can withstand low temperatures and even mild frost, but bring them inside if a surprise hard frost sets in. From Good Housekeeping, the buzzword flexitarian. This eating approach, popularized by Don Jackson Blattner, RD, focuses on having plant-based food most of the time, but leaves wiggle room for eating meat occasionally. Also called semi-vegetarianism, flexitarianism offers some eco and health benefits and was named a best diet by U.S. News and World Report. From Real Simple, Kitchen Hero canned chickpeas, also known as garbanzos or sisi. These pantry stalwarts are the Allison Janney of legumes, brilliant supporting actors that blend in effortlessly while vastly improving the overall product. Most at home in Mediterranean cooking, think creamy hummus, bold salads, and spicy chorizo stews. They also add protein and fiber to healthy-ish treats like faux cookie dough bites. When the Academy finally hands out the Oscar for Best Bean, our money is on these. And there's 3 quickie recipes for you. Pink hummus. Pulse a 15.5-ounce can of chickpeas, which has been drained and rinsed, and 1 small cooked beet in a food processor until finely chopped. Add 1 chopped clove of garlic, 2 tablespoons tahini, 1 tablespoon lemon juice, 3/4 teaspoon kosher salt, and 1/4 teaspoon lemon zest. Process until smooth. With processor running, drizzle in 1/4 cup of olive oil. Refrigerate for up to a week. For chickpea tuna salad, stir a 15.5-ounce can of chickpeas, drained and rinsed again, 2 tablespoons each red wine vinegar and olive oil, and 1/2 teaspoon kosher salt in a bowl. Let stand, stirring occasionally for 20 minutes. Stir in a 5-ounce can of oil-packed tuna, which has been drained, 1 cup chopped radicchio, 1/4 cup chopped Kalamata olives, 2 tablespoons capers, and 1.5 tablespoons chopped red onion. Serve over arugula or cooked farro. And for chickpea cookie dough bites, pulse 1.5 cups rolled oats and 1/2 cup pecan halves in a food processor until finely ground. Add a 15.5-ounce can of chickpeas, drained and rinsed, 1/2 cup of raisins, 1/3 cup of molasses, 3/4 teaspoon cinnamon, and 1/4 teaspoon kosher salt. Process until smooth. Roll the mixture into 22 balls, about 1.5 tablespoons each. Chill until firm. Refrigerate covered for up to a week. From Good Housekeeping, the April crop is scallions. The white part of this spring allium boasts savory onion flavor, while the green stalk on top is like a fresh herb. Here are our Test Kitchen's favorite ways to use it. And they've got 3 quickie recipes, too. First, tomato vinaigrette. In a bowl, whisk together 1 tablespoon each rice vinegar, olive oil, and grated fresh ginger, and 1/4 teaspoon each salt and pepper. Toss with 8-ounce plum tomatoes, seeded and cut into 1/4-inch pieces, then 2 scallions thinly sliced. Serve over vegetables, seafood, steak, or chicken. And a spring herb frittata. Whisk together 6 large eggs and 1/2 teaspoon each salt and pepper. Stir in 6 scallions, 1 cup fresh parsley, and 1/2 cup dill, all chopped. Heat 2 tablespoons oil in medium cast iron skillet on medium. Add the egg mixture. Cook 2 minutes. Dollop with 2 ounces of goat cheese. And bake at 350 until just set, 18 minutes. And for creamy rice, cook 1 cup long grain white rice per package directions. Combine 1/2 cup sour cream and 2 tablespoons lime juice. Fold the sour cream mixture into the cooked rice along with 2 scallions sliced and 1/2 cup fresh cilantro roughly chopped. And you might have some matzo crackers in your home. If you do, here are some matzo toasts you might enjoy. They're not actual recipes. You literally just layer these things on. And so here are four options. First, on top of your cracker, avocado, plus cucumber, plus red pepper, plus a drizzle of olive oil. Or option 2, peanut butter, plus banana, plus blueberries, plus toasted almonds, plus maple syrup. And option 3, cream cheese, plus sliced strawberries, plus pistachios, they are ground it looks like, plus a drizzle of honey. And the last option, hummus, plus diced radishes, plus matchsticks, that's it, matchstick radishes, and then chives. And those all look beautiful and sound like they're going to taste yummy. From Good Housekeeping, they've got a dill dip here. Active time 10 minutes, total time as well. You need 2 cups plain Greek yogurt, 2 tablespoons grated, 2 teaspoons, boy, what a difference, grated lemon zest, plus 1 tablespoon lemon juice, kosher salt and pepper, 2 scallions finely chopped, 1/4 cup flat leaf parsley chopped, quarter cup fresh dill, roughly chopped, plus more for sprinkling. In a bowl, combine yogurt, lemon zest and juice, and a half teaspoon each salt and pepper. Fold in scallions, parsley, and dill. Serve topped with more dill and a cracked pepper. It makes 2.5 cups, and you can use the sauce for roasted salmon or grilled shrimp. It's also good on a BLT or chicken sandwich. From Martha Stewart Living, asparagus with blender hollandaise. We need 1.5 sticks of unsalted butter, 2 large egg yolks, room temperature, 2 teaspoons fresh lemon juice plus more to taste, a pinch of cayenne pepper, kosher salt and freshly ground pepper, 1 pound of jumbo asparagus trimmed, bottom halves peeled. Melt butter in a small saucepan over medium heat. Let cool about 5 minutes. Put egg yolks in a blender. With the motor running, gradually add butter. Add lemon juice and cayenne. Season with salt and pepper. Sauce should be thick but fluid enough to drizzle from a spoon, and should form a pool, not a mound. If too thick, thin it with warm water. Season to taste with lemon juice, salt, and pepper. Sauce is best used immediately, but can be stored in a thermos about 30 minutes. Meanwhile, bring 1 inch salted water to a boil in a large straight-sided skillet. Add the asparagus in batches if needed to avoid crowding. Cook until crisp tender, 3 to 4 minutes, then drain. Serve warm or room temperature with sauce. Active time on this was 10 minutes, total time 20, and it serves 4. And how about pasta Alfredo with lemon and asparagus? We need 3 large egg yolks, a cup of heavy cream, 2 ounces Parmigiano Reggiano, finely grated, about 1.25 cups, plus more for serving. 1 teaspoon finely grated lemon zest, plus more for serving, optional, and 1 tablespoon fresh lemon juice. Kosher salt and freshly ground pepper, 12 ounces linguine, 1 pound of asparagus trimmed and cut on the diagonal into 1-inch pieces, about 2 cups. In a bowl, whisk together egg yolks, cream, cheese, lemon zest, 1/2 teaspoon salt, and 1/8 teaspoon pepper to combine. In a large pot of boiling salted water, cook pasta 2 minutes less than packaged instructions. Add the asparagus. Cook until bright green and tender, about 2 minutes more. Reserve 1/2 cup pasta water. Drain. Return pasta and asparagus to a pot along with the egg mixture. Toss until well combined, adding a few tablespoons of pasta water at a time until sauce coats pasta. Then add lemon juice. Season to taste. Serve immediately with more cheese, pepper, and lemon zest. Active and total time, 35 minutes, and it serves 4. We've run out of time for today's episode of Ladies Magazine. Be sure and listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jean Latshaw, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Ladies Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.